Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
What's up, everybody? I hope you are doing good. Glad to be out of that big freeze we had here in the UK. Man, it was cold. A lot of people got screwed up. I hope everybody's back to normal. Sending love and whatnot. So, okay, Huey off the record. We like to feature new talent. And my guest this week is no exception. He's an up-and-coming comedian, actor, writer, producer. Some of you might have heard of him. He goes by the name of Ricky Gervais. I'm joking, of course. But seriously, it's an honor to have Ricky back on the show. We talk about his recent tour that we spoke about right before he started going out on it. It's called Humanity, and it's a Netflix special now. You know what I'm saying? Even though I can't get it out sometimes. We get deep talking about privilege and equality, and we keep it light talking about the ailments we don't really have, but we're afraid we might. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, enjoy Ricky Gervais and I speaking at the Royal Crescent Bath Hotel. Very nice place. Last time I saw you was at your place in London, and it was kind of like halfway through your Humanity thing.
Yeah. It's been a year now. I'm sort of ending the English leg of the tour where I started it in Bristol. I think which you came to see.
I think it was like the second show you did.
Last February. And which is good because you start a show, you've done warm-ups, and, you know, the first shows are good enough, they're great. In fact, then,
didn't you almost have a heart attack though?
I know that was
the time. Because you weren't sick medicine.
Being
or something.
A hypochondriac, yeah, I was ill when I got off, a palpitation, and I just said to the crowd, "I said, oh, is there any doctors in?" I joked. I said, "I think I'm having a heart attack, right?" And they all laughed. I went, "Oh, what if I was? I don't want to die here." Right? And I made a thing of it. And of course, the papers put Ricky leave stage
but dudes our age. I think whenever you get to 50 and past 50, any little thing could possibly be it, you know, especially if things are going good, because I come from that kind of like, Catholic guilt thing. Well, if things are going great, I must have a heart condition.
If I find a lump, that's it. I'm dead the next day, you know, and my girlfriend just said, well, just go and get it checked out. I go, what do you mean go and get it checked out? Just say no, because I'm not a doctor. But I just had my yearly medical and everything's okay at the moment. I had the finger, I had everything.
We call it Moon River. Moon River.
It's so funny, right, because the doctor, they go, and can I give you, I said, yes, yeah, right. And he went, do you need a chaperone? I said, that would be worse. I said, what, now you've got a mate watching.
Avert your gaze, but if you know, if I say my safe word,
it is awkward. But you know what? The finger to me is more pleasant than taking blood. Really? I'm so allergic to needles. After I've had the blood test, the finger's nothing to me because I think I'm slightly phobic. I could never be a junkie.
Don't bug me because when I was in the Marines, you go to boot camp, you walk down this, like, we call it the gauntlet, and corpsmen on either side are just jabbing you in the shoulder with needles. So after a while, it doesn't mean anything. For me, the blood pressure thing that goes around your arm.
Worries me a little bit.
My life insurance because we're moving and all this stuff. So the guy comes over yesterday, peeing a cup. He's like, do you smoke? I was like, I don't smoke anymore. Do you do any of these recreational drugs? And it's like crack, heroin. I was like, smoke a little bit of weed. And my wife afterwards was like, why'd you tell him that? I was like, well, if I die and I got a little bit of weed in my system and then they find out about it and they know the contract, you're fucked. So just go along with me being honest. Yeah. But whenever they put that thing on, I freak out. Like, he had a wrist thing. I was like, D-d-d-, and I came off with, like, crazy high blood pressure.
Oh, really?
And I don't have high blood pressure.
That's the only thing that I always pass that test.
That thing freaks me the fuck out because that, I think, is like, you know, I don't know, because, and they always do it when I'm stressed about something, like I'm chasing my daughter through a yard, and they're like, come in, do your blood pressure.
But even the thought of it, because that's the first thing I do, yeah, is blood pressure, but I'm already thinking of the needle and the finger. Yeah, but honestly, I think I could do it myself. I think I could probably take my own. It's just having the needle in there and it's scratching around and they're taking a start. I go, oh my God, yeah, it makes me sweat. It's phobia. I don't know why. I think it's just, it's like an invasion. I don't want that in my...
When you were a kid, did you have like a bad doctor moment? Not that you needed a chaperone.
Well, but I never had blood. It's worse. Because I've had injections. I have a flu jab.
They do a physical and they give you shots if you need to be somewhere weird.
Yeah, but the when you do a physical for a movie, it really is... let me hear your heart, cough, and it's done. No, really, do you know what I mean?
Peace, do you need anything?
Yeah, I mean, just think of the people you see on screen. That's, I think, true. Jesus Christ, yeah, if they're okay, then, yeah, I'm fine.
Randy Quaid's doing movies.
So, no, this is the only extent. I do once a year, blood, urine, everything like that, and it's still okay. But obviously what's annoying is the scores go down just through age. Yeah. You know, the hearing's just slightly worse. The sight's just slightly worse.
So these things, man, I had to get these, the glasses I need now to read.
I think I should have glasses. I can't read that bottom line anymore.
You gotta get some crazy gangster glasses like this.
Yeah, well, they're great. They're cool. They're cool.
My wife picked them out.
They're nearly sunglasses.
Yeah, well, they're Coca-Cola green, they call it.
Oh, right, yeah.
A little bit of Carlos Mocello, you know, the crime boss guy.
Yeah.
To date Marilyn Monroe, that dude. And you get away with it, man.
It's
you
not
play
vanity.
Madison Square Garden a
but
couple times, so
but
you
know
can wear
what,
them
though?
Shirts.
It's not vanity, it's laziness. Mm. If an optician came in now and gave me a test and said, here's the glasses, I go, cheers. But they go, you've got to go and book an appointment. I go, forget it.
I look good in glasses, but fuck it. You could also get zapped. Actually,
oh,
I don't know.
No.
If really?
That's worse.
Really?
That is worse than the eyes.
Yeah.
Eyes and testicles. I was saying to the
leave
doctor,
my round things alone.
Right, so he's doing the balls. The doctor's doing the balls as well. And I'm saying this is an evolutionary.
What kind of doctor do you have that does the balls? Ask for chaperones.
No, right.
Does the balls?
Well, they do it now because everyone gets sued if I said so.
That's
so he's doing the, and I go, oh God, I hate this bit as well. And he's sort of laughing, you know, because it's awkward for everyone, you know.
He's in that line of work for a reason. You know?
Yeah. Right, so I go, why couldn't we have a little cage around those? It's just the fear of someone. Do you know what I mean? A kick in the, I don't think you can explain to people what a kick in the balls is like. It's
like a third as painful as childbirth.
Well, I know. Yeah.
My wife said something to me about that. I was like, yeah, well, you know, ever get kicked in the pussy bone or anything like that when you were a kid? Because, I mean, I've seen it happen. A girl's going, ooh. Like in like field hockey or some shit, not like I'm kicking girls or anything. But you see it happen. It seems like it's really painful for them. Like getting punched in the boob maybe hurts like that.
But even a flick to a testicle, I'm on all fours, and I want to vomit. I don't know what it is.
When I was a kid, man, not that this happened a lot, but anybody pretended they were going to flick you in the balls, that would even hurt. It would set the whole panic.
I know.
Like, you know how your back of your legs get tingly or whatever it is? You know, like, ooh,
this is
my balls.
This is like Frost Nixon, isn't it? This interview. All we've done is moan about our ass balls.
Can I get the badge, man? Actually, I have questions and shit. So we were talking about the humanity thing. I thought was great was because I follow you on Twitter. You're one of the few people I do follow because you actually give a fuck about other people and actually love engaging people, which I think is a very proletariat of you. But you were all over the world, man. You played The Garden a couple times.
Yeah.
How was that playing The Garden?
It was great.
Did you have like the Rolling Stone dressing room where it was like just the locker room and
it is the biggest dressing room. and they sort of put it out in black. It's really weird because the showers are like for a basketball team or something.
It's like the team's locker room.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But it's I'm still a thrill playing New York. I only did a few major cities. I played there, Chicago, completely different vibe. This most beautiful Victorian theatre.
What was the place in Chicago?
Chicago Theatre.
Oh, the Chicago Theatre, right.
And I played the Dolby, the home of the
Oscars.
Oh,
yeah, the place in LA,
It was great. I played three there, and I was ill. I'm always ill in LA, right? And I called the doctor out, emergency doctor.
I'm dying.
I resisted it for ages, and I'd float, and I just couldn't. I was breathing and everything. I was saying, you've got to see a doctor. I called the doctor out, right? And he said it is LA. He said LA is one of the most polluted places. So I come over you're on a plane for 11 hours, and he gave me some things to take. And I went out on stage, and I was talking like nearly coughing, and I addressed it straight away. I said, "Sorry, I'm really ill." I said, "But I didn't cancel." and you get a round of applause because suddenly people think, oh yeah, that would have been a bore.
Yeah, if I was sick, I wouldn't even fucking be here watching this.
I know, yeah. So I get the sympathy straight away and get it out of the way just in case you cough or... But it was great. I loved playing New York, LA, Chicago, and I'm going back to do the West Coast, San Francisco, Seattle, and end it in Vancouver.
You've done gigs in San Francisco before, right?
I haven't. Really? I've never been to San Francisco. I can't wait.
I love your new humanity thing. We talked about that before, but... There's some things that you might get a little bit of a weird vibe in San Francisco. Like, especially, you know, like the kid thing, which I think is hilarious.
What's the kid thing?
The bit about the...
not having children.
Yeah, the way that goes through that, because, I mean, I think people can identify with that. But, you know, I'm just thinking the politically correct are in San Francisco.
Yeah, but they know what I'm doing. I think this show...
No, I know the people that will buy tickets will be your people.
Yeah.
You
know, or anything taken out of context.
Yeah.
When this goes on Netflix and it's taken out of context and you weren't there or you get one line or something, every single demographic, everybody's ism, everything that they care about will cause a storm, mm-hmm. you know? But that's the way of the world. I talk about it when someone said, you know, I should never talk about food allergies. Mm. I sent back, I talk about AIDS, cancer, famine and the Holocaust. And you're telling me I shouldn't talk about food allergy, you know? But that's the same everywhere you go. They're laughing at all the other shit, but when it comes to their shit, they go, well, that's not funny, dude. Mm. I go, but you were laughing at famine and cancer and AIDS. Yeah. And so can't you see that, you know, I'm joking about them because that's not close to you. But when I say something's close to you, you think, well, like, you can't joke about that. Well, of course you can. Of course you can. Yeah, you know, offence is about feelings and feelings are personal. And people have the right to get offended. Everyone's got their own thing. And I know that they have the right to be offended, but I have the right to offend because I'm not trying to offend you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a very subtle thing because people, they are blind to it. So they can laugh at the other stuff because they're not involved, right? Yeah. And they look at it objectively and they go, well, he's not really, he's making a joke about Anne Frank and it's in cut and I get it, right? But when he talks about my thing,
you think people identify too much with their thing?
Well, everyone thinks that their thing is the worst thing in the world. Everyone puts forward a thing. Whatever it is, whatever disease you talk about or thing, they go, yeah, but with cancer, da-da-da, and with da-da, but with my thing, you go, well, your thing isn't any more special than those other things.
Well, I think people are so subjective to the world now. The victimhood thing we were talking about before I pressed the button was pretty on key with this. It's like, kind of like going... All right, if people are going to not really understand or be compassionate to other people's plights...
Well, people get tired of being told what they can and can't do, okay? The authoritarian liberal, for all the good and for all the right reasons, political correctness came in to protect the innocent, the disenfranchised, and you say, you can't say that and it hurts people. And I get that, but then people started saying, they took it personally. They started saying, what about me? What about me? Right? Yeah. People that had it their own way all their life, you know? And when you've had privilege... all your life, equality seems like oppression. So suddenly it's going. but people are saying that. I've heard people say, "Oh, you can't say anything anymore," and they mean, "Well, we're not allowed to say the N-word anymore." I go, "No, you're not allowed to say the N-word anymore." It's
like this comes actually reminds me of how the Golden Globes sucked this year because not because you weren't there because when you're there they're awesome, but. I mean, this guy Seth Meyers. He's a comedian.
Yeah, he's great.
And but he's one of those guys that is really jumping on this whole.
Well, he sort of had to. I think he did really well, and I think his jokes were great, and it was the year for it. But it was almost like the agenda was handed to him.
Yeah.
And you can't do that with comedy. You can't say, oh, don't mention this and have a go at this. That's red rag to a bull for me.
Yeah.
If I was doing a corporate and they said, oh, whatever you do, don't mention the CEO's wig. Mm. Fuck me. That's 20 minutes on the CEO's wig.
I did a corporate at IBM and I just was talking about my iPhone the whole time.
It's irresistible.
Don't talk about your iPhone. I'm talking about my iPhone.
It's irresistible.
And I'm a musician. I'm a comedian.
No one wants to be told what to do unless you're a sheep, right? And it works both ways. It does work both ways. So when I say things like just because you're offended it doesn't mean you're right, I get back, well, it doesn't mean you're wrong either. I go, no, it doesn't. No, you're right. You have the right to be offended, but no one has the right to get through life having never been offended. And that's what some people think. People think the definition of free speech is they can say what they want, but if it comes back, oh, I get it on Twitter, someone says something to me like, you fucking, you unfunny fat cunt, right? And I go back and I...
That's like the fact that you're like, okay, motherfucker.
Yeah, I say something back and they come back and go, oh, thin skinned. I go, what, you're allowed to insult me, but I have to just take this, do I? Yeah. So I'm the thin skinned one.
They believe they're punching up, you know what I mean?
It's like, oh,
it's David and Goliath kind of vibe. Yeah. Like, you know, because a lot of times... people don't look at people who are in public as people. They don't think we're people, or they think that we have hugely distant realities from theirs.
You speak to half the general public, and they think that it's their right to insult a celebrity because they made that celebrity.
Yeah, oh yeah, that you own, you're owned. And I had that a lot. I was doing a radio thing over Christmas on Six Music for Steve Lamacq, right?
Yeah.
And he's a cool dude, but I was playing my own shit. You know, he likes his type of stuff, I like my own stuff. And at some point, they hand me a piece of paper because Prince Harry did, he guest editored Radio 4 one day.
Oh, yeah,
He did, like, Obama. He had, like, an interview with Obama.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so I read the read. I read the read. And you could catch Prince Harry. And afterwards, I was like, I like what he's doing with that Invictus Games. Cool. So Twitter lit up, apparently, because people were listening at that time. And what are they saying? My tongue's up his ass. Am I trying to be the DJ at the wedding? The United States was founded on freedom from a monarchy and all this stuff. And like, calling him a freeloader and me, like, whatever. They're just going off on the fact that they misunderstood. I was told to read something, and they're waiting to be offended. And a lot of people are anti-royalist. And I can't.
They are. People are waiting to be offended again, which is fine. If that's your hobby, good luck to you. But you're not going to have a great life. And the other thing is that
exactly
people nowadays love Schadenfreude. Papers thrive on it. Mm-hmm. No one wants to hear a great story about someone, and that's human nature, right?
Well, I mean, Britney Spears is a perfect example of how the celebrity curve has been created in this day and age, right? You love them, you love them, you love them. They're getting a little too big for their britches. Fuck them. Fuck them. You know what? She didn't kill herself. Love, love, love.
Yeah, I know. The people want things on their terms, mm-hmm. which is as opposed to walking away or dealing with it. And I talk about this in Humanity, that the reason that things are like they are is because people fell for this thing on social media that it was more important to be popular than right.
Yeah.
And now people don't care about being right anymore. They care about being on the right side. So people don't look at the argument anymore. They look at who's saying it. They want to be on the right side. And that's a defiance. You know, now in this post-truth era, people know that it's a lie, but they still say it because it annoys the other side.
No, yeah, they're baiting the other side.
They're baiting the other side.
You see that a lot with the Trump supporters in those red hats.
They don't care what's true and what's not true.
They just see people
Trump.
They don't like melting down, they're like,
they hate Hillary more.
Yeah.
So I don't know what Trump could do to lose his 32%. I mean, I don't think he could do anything. I think they'd still...
Politics now is a tattoo. If you get a tattoo, you're stuck with it, especially if you're a young person. Yeah. You're not allowed to evolve or grow or change your opinion. And I always thought that was kind of fucked up, right? Like, was it that Muhammad Ali quote? If you believe the same thing you do at 20 as you do at 50, you wasted 30 years.
I love that.
I mean, I live by that, man. So I know things I've done 5 years ago I don't fucking agree with anymore. So especially with young people in this social media thing, when they actually have it archived. So someone types a tweet out that's horribly ignorant. And then 2-3 years later, or even more than that, they become popular with a lot of people for whatever reason. That comes up, and then that just undercuts anything they've done up to that point.
Well, I think we're lucky because I feel sorry for people who grew up their teen years with social media because it's there forever. You know, teenagers, you do goofy stuff and it's gone. Mm-hmm. It's in your mate's memories. You know,
the shit I did when I was in a band is before internet. It's like great.
And now they turn up and, you know, the employer... They go to the job for the police and they say, is this you smoking a joint? Mm-hmm. You know, and you go, I was 15.
With an underage goat, you know, I got you any which way. And I think having kids is kind of weird because my frame of reference is now, it's almost antiquated, really. Because me growing up on the mean streets of New York City doesn't mean shit anymore. It means shit to me and people that don't play with a lot of social media. But social media is, you see kids killing themselves, like some Australian girl, like a little girl, like 7, 8, 9, or something like that, killed herself because she was getting bullied online by people. It's fucking crazy.
Well, I think bullying's always been one of the worst things in the world because whatever's happening in the outside world, right, and you can be part of something, anything, you could be part of a demographic that's bottom of the pile, but if you're one individual being bullied, you just think, well, why me? I've got no one. Yeah. I'm not just representing. It's just me. Why do they just hate me? Yeah. It must be terrible to be bullied and alienated. It's the worst thing in the world, I think, being alienated. Just more than being ill or unhealthy or poor. It's just because you go, this is just me people hate. There's nothing like it. I really feel for people who feel alienated and lonely and hated through no fault of their own, and it's awful.
I think 90% of the people who participate in the bullying are just doing it so they don't become the spotlight of
oh, it is. Oh, you see it.
A lot of these, because I see kids, my boy's six, right? So he's the baby of his class. I see kids fucking with him a little bit. I told him, look, if anybody bullies you, punch him in the nose. And then they won't bully you anymore. Because it happened to me. I was the baby of my class.
Right.
So I was bullied a little bit. And I figured my advice to him was probably not the smartest advice. But if the head teacher goes, hey, why'd you tell him to do that? I said, well, because now whoever the bully is not going to bully my son anymore.
Yeah.
His job is not to rat this kid out. His job is to have this kid. And it's also personal conflict resolution, I think it's called, right? Where if you and I have a problem, we can talk it out, right? That's, or we fight, we roll around, we act stupid, whatever. But nowadays, there's always a third party, be that, you know, Twitter, or be that, you know, the social media thing is a big third party thing that's happening where we can fight without rules because there's always somebody that's going to pluck the person out at the last minute. And that's kind of the safety catch, I think, is fucking with society.
Well, yeah, you've got to change society's actually to make everyone safe and fair. But in the meantime, you've got to sort out your son.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to wait 5 years for society to change and it'd be better for everyone. You want to go, well, at the moment, I've got to worry about this kid, right? And it is a problem. And I don't know how rife it is. And
Kids are fucking horrible. I mean, they're probably worse than when we were kids. And they were fucked up then.
Well, I don't remember there being much bullying of anyone in my school or my... Maybe there was, or I didn't see it, or... I thought it was banter or something, but I don't remember seeing. I hear these horror stories now that people are targeted.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, I don't understand. I don't see the fun in it. But you even see it on a smaller scale. You see, like, even like Celebrity Big Brother, within a couple of days, there's a scapegoat.
And they
might be a complete arsehole, but when it's suddenly 9 against 1, you want to go, come on, calm down. You know,
but that's whole, like, the mentality of fight, fight, fight at school. You know, everybody go and watch the fight. You don't have a stake in the fight. There's no skin in the game, but you want to watch people do shit that you're not necessarily prepared to do.
But that's what fiction's for. Because the good thing about fiction is we create our heroes and villains so no one really gets hurt. It's role play for the soul. So you can have a bully punched in the mouth in fiction. And nobody, and I like that metaphor. And I like reliving it, but when you see it in reality, when you suddenly see it and it's a reality show, and you see that is someone's real life, that's not a fictional character.
Yeah.
That guy's come out now and he's ruined his life by doing this terrible fucking TV show, embarrassed himself in public. These reality shows where these poor kids, they have sex on telly that they're going to regret. Film people that shit the bed. You think, what are you doing? Never mind what your nan thinks or what's your kids gonna think in 15 years.
Because I think that's the whole thing, is no one really cares, no one looks into the future, and it's always almost as if you're talking about fiction. There really is no real new fiction because we don't need it.
We don't need it
because it used to almost be a lesson to one who was enjoying that art not to do that shit in real life. Now we don't even have to have somebody. Yeah, we don't have to have somebody, you know, write the pathos. It's fucking there on CBB or whatever.
It looks like a virtual world, but it's actually real.
Yeah, people. I saw some guy. I don't even know his name. Joey Essex. I found out his name afterwards. Right, I don't know who he is. He's on The Only Way Is Essex, I imagine, because his last name's Essex, right?
Yeah.
He was in a hotel I was checking into with my wife, and I think I was with my son, right? And he's like, "Hey, what's up, man?" I was like, "What's up?" But I didn't know him, right? And it was kind of, you know, afterwards I think it was the concierge. Like, oh, that's the dude from... So I was like, who is that guy?
But there's a whole level of fame that we don't know about. I don't know about all those reality stars.
But this is apparently... He hasn't been on the show in a while. So it's kind of one of those things where, well, what does this motherfucker do now? At least I have... I can play an instrument. I can produce a record. You know what
but
I'm saying?
But that's the thing, though. That's the thing, right? So now you've got a 14-year-old sitting at home, right? Mm-hmm. He's watching these Jersey Shores. He's watching the Kardashians. He's watching these people. He's watching these people just be themselves, right, and do terrible things and get into trouble. Not those examples, but, you know, and become millionaires. Why is he going to train to be a doctor?
Yeah, exactly.
Why is he going to go to school and work weekends and pay away to do and have a student loan when he thinks, well, I can just go on YouTube and do some goofy shit. I can do a terrible thing and write a book about it. Mm-hmm. Now there's no difference between fame and infamy.
Terrible thing.
Yeah.
It's so
you get rewarded.
True,
you get rewarded for people nowadays, and again through Twitter, people would rather be known as an arsehole than not known at all. People tweet me a nasty thing, I slam them, they go, "Hey man, I got a reply from Ricky Gervais, you're my hero." I go, why did you do that? Why did you let... Why do you...
It's like, civility and dignity are not... They're not commodities anymore.
They're not. And do you know what there isn't anymore either? Shame.
Yeah, you know, you're fucking right, man.
No one's ashamed of anything anymore.
I mean, it must be me growing up Catholic and being an altar boy and shit and knowing shame. You know, it's like one of those things that's in the Bible all the time, and you feel kind of like that heat in your neck or whatever, where you're like, ooh, I'm ashamed.
You know, I remember that one of the first times I felt guilty about something, right? I'll tell you about it. It's a funny story, and it's not that bad. I was a good kid. Mm-hmm. I don't break the law. I never have. I've never wanted to... you know what I mean? I've always been scared of getting in trouble, and I've always been conscious of doing the right thing, because I had a sort of wise little head on my shoulders when I was
You're also the youngest in your family, right?
So I lived through exactly.
All the mistakes have been made
already. Exactly that. So I knew about regret. I knew. Mm-hmm. So I know. And so I've been sort of lucky that I guess I made the right path. But I must have been about 10 maybe. I got older brothers and sisters, as you say. Mm-hmm. So my sister, when I was 10, was about 24. She's with she's with a boyfriend who's now a husband, right? And they're moving. So my brother-in-law dropped off loads of 7-inch singles, right, to look after while he's moving, right? And they're in the spare room, right? And they're Graham's Records, right? So I had a friend over, and they're looking through the things, and he goes, "Oh my God, all these!" They're old stuff for me. I didn't care about Elvis and all this sort of stuff. But this one guy, with two little nerds. We loved chemistry. He went, "Oh, I love Elvis," right? He went, "Oh, I swapped me some of these for my chemistry set," right? And I went, and I said, "How many are there?" And he went, "Oh, about 10." And I went, "Okay." And so I gave him about 5, right? And I went, "Don't tell anyone," right? He went, "No," and I swapped it, right? I had a little chemistry set, and I was playing this, and he had the Elvis. No one would notice. That night, I wake up in a fucking sweat. I go, "Jesus Christ, I can't live with it." My heart's in, like I've murdered someone.
Yeah.
I go into my mum's room, and I go, "I gave some of Graham's Records away for so-and-so." She went, "Okay, well, if you're good now, I won't tell him," right? So, and I'm good, and everything like that. And I forget about it, right? It must have been about 8 years later. Right, we're talking about this, right?
8 years.
Yeah, so I'm good for 8 years, right?
Good, I can't see anxiety's gone.
Yeah. We're talking about it, and Graham, he went, "Did you get those records I dropped off for you, by the way?" He dropped them off for me, and my mum hadn't told me. My mum saw this as an opportunity to make me a good boy for 8 years.
See, that's some fucking parenting right there. See, that's the shit I aspire to, right? Oh, my God.
I know.
How many kids in your family? 4?
Because
I remember from the bit you were talking.
Yeah, my next oldest is Bob, 11 years older, then Marsha, 13, and my oldest brother.
So by the time you were coming around, your parents were ninjas at that shit. They were
And I was nearly an only child. In fact, so I wasn't spoiled. My mum fostered a kid, so I had someone of my sort of same age around when
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, my oldest brother was like, when I was born, he was 11. So by the time I was 6, 7, 8, he's a
teenager. So all the kids are out of the house and then you show up.
Yeah, I remember when I was 12 and I asked my mum why my brother and sister are so much older than me. She just went, "You're a mistake."
Oh, God.
I know, I just laughed.
Yeah. Oh, dude. All right. So I wanted to ask about acting, because aside from I really like you as an actor, I think that's a really cool thing that you got. Do you think, and this might be a thing that comedians become really great actors, because you have to be believable in real time in front of a real crowd. Did that kind of get you to, maybe when you were a kid?
Acting thing was sort of almost not an accident, but coincidental. The first thing I did, I always thought of I was a performer, but I was a performer like a mate in a pub's a performer. Mm-hmm. I was a buffoon. I made people laugh, right? I wasn't even trying to be a comedian. I started off...
I was an amateur wise ass for a long time.
No, I wasn't even trying to be... Yeah. I was always funny at school and I wanted to be a musician. I failed at that. And then I got a normal job. And it wasn't until I was about 36 that I got a job in a local radio station, XFM. Mm-hmm. And I was the head of speech. It was still an admin job. And I was meant to give the DJs things to...
To
read, and I made them funny.
Prince Harry's doing the Radio 4, right?
Exactly. So, and then I thought, this is easier if I just do it myself. Mm-hmm. And I started popping up on shows. So now I'm sort of a little sideways step.
That was your beginning.
That was my beginning, yeah. And people saying, "Who's that funny guy," right? And people, the DJs say, "Oh, he just works here. That's right, he just works here, right?" So it was a real lovely Trojan horse. So it wasn't me coming on going, and now some hilarious stylings from our resident comedian.
So
it
no pressure.
No pressure.
Did you work that into like a bit or an act? Or?
No, I just wanted to be funny. I just thought this would be funny. And I teased the DJs. I'd say things like, why'd you say fast approaching 11 o'clock? It doesn't get faster going towards 11 o'clock, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just did normal people that normal people say, you know. And then I got a little call from someone at Channel 4 and said, we're starting a new show called 11 O'Clock Show, which is where I first bumped into you.
Yeah, you on went it. Through this. I was probably very stoned.
yeah. And,
that's pretty much what I did when I got off planes, man. Yeah. Like, give it a wee.
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know, I made a little name for myself there. And then when it came to acting, it was because I'd written the part of David Brent to put the office around it. So it was always going to be me. It was always my thing.
And there's so much nuance level. I mean, you know this, but there's so much levels of what's going on.
Well, that's because I didn't know the rules of action. I'd never trained. So all I knew was, if this is a fake documentary, I want this to look real. Yeah. I want this to act like a normal person. So
it's got
to
be like one of those things where the ping pong ball, or what is it, there's the ball drops through a pachinko machine.
Yeah.
It's got to hit something realistic every level.
And I didn't want to, if the DOP said, look, that's against the light there. Do you want to just sit there? I go, no, I wouldn't sit there. Just film the action. I want it to be like wildlife.
Yeah.
So you can't do that in a documentary. You can't. Well, you can now because they contrive it. I remember in The Office, I cheated less than real documentaries these days.
That's crazy.
You know what I mean? I wouldn't even have a camera waiting if I walked through a door. You'd have to get through the door and it might hit the door.
Directing yourself, right? Was that how you gave yourself, I guess, the...
I would never have been able to do it if it wasn't a fake documentary.
Really?
I think if my first job had been me acting in something that I'd written and directed, because I knew what it had to look like.
Mm-hmm.
I watched all those docu-soaps. I'd worked in a real office, so I knew what everything looked like. Yeah. So, and I think directing at its most basic is answering a series of questions confidently. It's as easy to get it right as get it wrong, particularly if you've lived that life. So I based The Office on the office I worked in. I made it look like that, so I knew, you know.
Well, it gives you reference points, right? Like actual true reference points.
Exactly. So it was just real. And I think if my first thing was a space spoof or something, I'd have been in trouble.
But
the fact that it was just, you know, people acting normally and everything gave me that footing. And luckily the BBC... you know, that left me alone, and they have ever since. It could have been very different. So I don't know if I've got better or worse at acting. I really don't know. I don't...
Well, you went from different kinds of acting.
Yeah, well, it's almost the last thing I think about.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of... Is that a good thing, you think? Because I know that when we say we're doing a record, the Criminals are doing a record, the actual vocal performance I'm doing or the actual guitar playing I'm playing... is very important in the final edit of the thing, but it's not necessarily the priority in my mind.
I know, but it can send you mad because you think you can keep improving on something. Mm. And sometimes the best take is when you weren't thinking about it. Because
do you have someone like that in your orbit that kind of goes, that was good?
Or is
that
you? I watch it back. Yeah. I watch it back because it also depends what you're doing. Because with something like writing a sitcom or a film, it's write, rewrite, rewrite, plan it, rewrite, run it, cast it, do it, you know, and it's a pyramid. All the hard work,
it gets easy.
Whereas stand-up,
it's the inverted one, because
I used to write my shows. My first few shows, I wrote them like a lecturer, and then went out and acted them like an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And this last time, I thought, no, I walked out with nothing, with a few notes in the back of my hand, and it was organic. And what's great about that is there's no greater collaboration than you and 5,000 people.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you on that.
You know,
man.
Stand-up is almost less like an art form and more like a science because it either works or it doesn't. Mm. It's natural selection. They laugh at the bits and they stay in, and the bits that they're extinct.
Yeah,
so
they don't
what
have
you're, them, what you end up with is this perfect ecosystem. You know,
with doing it in front of people, the believability has to be there too. I mean, also when you say that the vibe with 5,000 people, you can't beat that.
Yeah.
If that's the paradigm you're looking at, right? So when you do other stuff, when you direct a film or something like that, you know what connectivity is, right? The synchronicity of being in that perfect storm. Do you try to create certain elements of that, like where you think people would vibe on stuff that you've done?
Nothing goes as well as a good ad lib, right?
Yeah, I'm the king of those between songs. I know it works.
Well, because people know it wasn't planned. Yeah. So you get marked out of more. Yeah. It's a harder dive.
Well, Duke Ellington said, you know, recording music is just a bad impersonation of a live event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you do that, and then you try and recreate it the next night. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not an ad lib anymore. Yeah. So
and it doesn't work as good.
It gets worse and then better. Because then it's not an ad lib anymore, but it's a great bit because it worked. It's the science. You let the science do it. Worked once, it'll work again. But I've always been a slave to realism in everything I've done, The Office or whatever, naturalism. And so I want everything to be real. So when I say this is a true story, I want them to know it is a true story. It's really important because
I think people
resonates
more.
They do because it is true.
Yeah.
In fact, I've lost jokes that are good jokes but are surreal jokes. And I think, well, they know that was a lie, so they might think the true story is a lie. So I drop the silly joke and I keep it to real. I keep it all to real.
So that comes back to almost the fake documentary idea.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it resonates more because you can be watching the greatest film in the world. You can be watching The Godfather for the first time, right? And if there's a gunshot or a squeal or shouting or your neighbour's taking away the police, you're at that window.
Yeah.
Fuck
the Godfather.
Coppola.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like...
I'm watching Floyd get dragged up by his hair.
Exactly.
We'll be back after a message from our sponsor.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The movie roles I've got given, it's because they want me to be a bit me.
Yeah.
If they want someone to look handsome and hit the right marks, there's 1,000 better people than me.
I hear you there,
if
man.
They
Likewise,
want a funny
yeah.
little guy who doesn't learn his lines but comes up with funny shit, I'm the man.
I relate to that on being a musician, where it's like, just be yourself. And
but you pick up little things like, you know, if they don't want you to mumble or they want to see both eyes, which I'm not a big fan of. Or
both eyes?
I mean, you know what I mean? These are rules that I try and break immediately. I did an episode of something that called Alias, which was a fun thing, right? And, you know...
That was like, the Jennifer Garner CIA
exactly,
thing,
yeah. And obviously it's all planned. It's a big set and you got to walk through and there's effects and everything.
Bunch of guys walking around in shorts, right?
Yeah, yeah. And a guy with a Steadicam, which is heavy.
Yeah.
I've got to do this thing and hit somewhere. And I just let him keep going, oh, fuck. I didn't hit the right mark, right?
Because it's totally unprofessional.
It's not my sort of thing. I heard him go, fuck, like that, right? And I just laughed, right? They had to put a sandbag down for me so my foot would hit it. Because I wanted to be natural.
Yeah,
I wanted to be natural. But it's no good for that sort of thing because they've planned the shot.
Yeah.
Like, the shot comes first, acting comes second.
Yeah.
That's what you haven't got time to do nuance. That if you've got like, you know, 50 pages to do in a week, right, and all these effects, it's like, you know, you're in Star Wars, you're a prop.
Yeah,
you know, you're not the important bit.
That's
you know,
tragedy. One of the Greeks,
exactly,
man.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Now, are you going to be doing a new film soon? Have you thought about the next project that's going on?
I finish Humanity.
But it's going to be on Netflix, you said.
And that comes out on Netflix in the spring.
Don't you have to plan shit like 2-3 years ahead of time now?
Well, you sort of do, except while I was on tour doing this, I was secretly writing a new thing, which is a new show I'm going to do, just a 6-part sort of comedy drama, which is my next thing. I play a guy whose wife dies, and I'm really depressed, and I was going to kill myself, but my dog was hungry. So that stops me killing. But, and then I decide, go, okay, well, this is a bonus then. I was going to be dead. I'm not dead. I'm going to do what the fuck I want from now on. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have as much fun as I want. I'm going to say what I want in this fucking world. I'm going to punish this world. Mm-hmm. It's like a superpower. And okay. then I'll kill myself if I want. And so it's a guy who has no restrictions.
Yeah, nothing to lose, man. Yeah. Everything again.
And so that's the next idea, which I've started writing, and I'll try and do that this year.
Well, if you need a sidekick, a guy to drink with when you're going out drinking.
Oh, there's, I might call you, man.
Dude, I'm probably going to get into acting, so I'll be there for you. Now, I also wanted to mention the whole Holly Weird idea. Like, I know that it's probably something we shouldn't really talk about as far as, like, the actual people who were getting their asses yeah. in trouble. We kind of yeah. mentioned some stuff earlier, but do you think that the people in Hollywood, because we're not from Hollywood.
No.
And I think going there and seeing how fucking weird they are and yeah, how much importance they put on In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah. You know, it's just, I mean, I don't move in those circles. I don't know of those people. Yeah,
being
you
the
know,
guy who stood in front of them and pretty much told them not to take those too seriously, and I don't yeah. think they did. I think they were kind of like, who's this fucking guy?
Even 2 years ago when I made a joke about Roman Polanski.
Yeah, man.
It was like, yeah, don't fuck with Roman. Good director. Yeah, he's our guy.
He's our guy. He's our guy. Exactly. Yeah. Totally knew what was going yeah, on.
I know. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't, to be fair, I don't know if these rumours are true or not. It can only be good that
it's happening, right?
It's getting seen to, isn't it? Yeah, it's at last. I mean, mm-hmm. surely.
But I thought, and this is just coming from a guy who's in the music business, and knowing like Hollywood from just, I guess, being a fan of movies, you knew that a lot of dudes, like for instance, a lot of guys who weren't necessarily good-looking dudes became movie producers.
The ugly boy got rich and famous. Yeah, and then,
like, you know, what yeah, attracted you to the million-dollar movie producer?
No, I know. There are sleaze bags in
This one actress said to me. She said to me, she was a model that turned into an actress, kind of thing, right? And she was in some George Michael thing or whatever. But she said, if I'm going to be spending 10 years of my life learning how to do something really, really well, like climb a mountain, so I'm climbing Mount Everest, I get to 50 feet from the top, and Harvey Weinstein's dick's between me and the top of Mount Everest. I'm going to get to Mount Everest. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where I think women prepare themselves for this kind of fucked up shit to happen to them.
But it's terrible they have to, isn't yeah. it? And I'm glad yeah.
Of course, man. I mean, we have moms and sisters and daughters. I know. You know it's that just, shit happens.
But no one knocked them out. It's really tragic that... That, you know, that you're young and impressionable, and some fucking horrible, disgusting, fat, sweaty pig makes you do something to get something mm-hmm. that you had the right to get to anyway. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, and I know there's people saying, "Oh, well, they didn't have to do it." I go, "Yeah, but
yeah.
you know what? Fucking hell, he didn't have to do it mm-hmm. either." It's like this mentality of. I think
it's a cycle of abuse, right? So if you have, it like, is. For instance, like that the guy, the movie producer. Who spent a lot of his probably early life not getting a girl, maybe getting bullied and being pointed at and taken advantage of for yeah. whatever reason, gets in a position of power. It always seems that way. People get in a position.
Pass it on. They yeah, pass it
and
on.
And they pass
yeah.
on their misery exactly. to someone else to kind of almost unburden themselves of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's fucked
it's,
up.
They're yeah. punishing all the women that said no, yeah. aren't yep. they, in their yeah. head? Because they've always been pigs. Mm-hmm. And they put it down to, oh, it wasn't fair because I wasn't good. No, you're always a fucking yeah. pig. You were just a young, yeah. ugly pig. And now you're a fucking rich, powerful pig. But you've always been a fucking pig.
Yeah, I thought everything was plain, man. I mean, because that lady I was talking about, I dated her friend, right? And Harvey Weinstein put his hand on her ass one time. And I was like, listen, motherfucker, I'm not trying to be in the music business, so I will knock you the fuck out if you do any shit like that again. And he was just like, freaked Brilliant. Out and left.
Oh, no, yeah.
And I was like, all right. When all this shit came out, I was like, where are these dudes in these women's lives? Are there brothers or fathers or boyfriends that are going to be like, listen, motherfucker, you can get knocked out talking to my girl like that or touching my girl like that or wanting to do this with my girl.
The more it happens, the more it's normalized. So mm-hmm. people think it's no big deal. But when you calm it down and go, hold on, this is a fucking big deal. It shouldn't be the norm,
yeah.
you know? And it's what happens in all society, right? Like, I remember growing up...
Well, you said, there's no shame, man. There's no fucking shame.
But there's a reason now, like, people are saying... Oh, it was the 70s. Oh, people more racist in the 70s. Didn't make it right in the yeah. 70s. It made it more normal because it was allowed.
It was like a Dean Martin's roast. Have you seen those? The Dean Martin roasts from back in the 70s? It's cringing, but it's sometimes it's pretty funny. But yeah. it's, you know, you could see that at that point, it was almost a move. We were talking earlier about the...
I remember thinking this isn't... I was old enough and it was late enough, I suppose, in time, in history, that... I knew racism wasn't right, and mm-hmm. I suppose I went the academic route. And all the people knew that they knew racism was wrong, and before you know it, there was punk, and there was 1979, and racism.
But
was
even
being
through that,
denounced.
Nazi punks fuck off, right? Wasn't that big punk rock thing?
Yeah, but the punks were an odd one out because they just wanted to annoy everyone.
Yeah.
So they said the most annoying thing possible, which was a swastika on your head, and it's like they weren't
the young
really,
ones, man.
They weren't white supremacists.
What were you watching when you were growing up on TV?
Well, I went through all the phases. You know, I did watch those big family broad when I was a kid with my parents, you know, stuff like...
Because there were like three television channels, right?
Well, that was it, yeah. You know, there was good and bad stuff. Yeah. And I watched the shit stuff good that I thought was good when I was 8, 9. And then I quickly grew out of it, I think because of my older brothers and sisters. So by the time I was, I'd say 10 or 11, I was into Monty Python.
Oh, really?
And I can't remember whether I liked it or liked being in a room with my older brothers and sisters laughing at it, right?
Yeah, no, I
but
got
it,
you.
It definitely skewered me. And so then the next greatest thing was Fawlty Towers, which I thought was the greatest sitcom ever produced and possibly still is. So I got onto that path early on. Mm. Same with music. When I was 10 or 11, I was listening to Neil Young and Bob Dylan.
That's badass.
And I just thought, well, this is what pop music is.
Mm-hmm.
And again, luck. Just luck.
You could have not been on receive, you know what I mean? You could have been one of those kids that doesn't have a recording device in their brain, you know what
I mean? Yeah, but I don't think you find your thing till you're sort of 13, 14, 15 because you're looking for it.
Yeah.
And then my own thing that I discovered that was mine was Bowie.
Yeah.
And I wore him like a badge.
Mm. There's a picture of you that you were telling me about that I looked up of you. You said, I'm trying to be like David Bowie in the 80s or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, he's a big influence on a lot of people.
Everyone.
Yeah.
And when I went
in
to
this
college,
country, yeah, even in America. Man.
Oh yeah, but when I went to college in like 1981, you asked someone, you had to say, who's your second favorite artist? Because you knew the first would be Bowie. Yeah, you know, it was like.
But especially when I was growing up, the things that I thought English, obviously, it was all this music that I was listening to, but there was a station. They probably still have a Channel 13, which is like the public broadcasting station, PBS.
Well, right? In America. Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah, yeah.
And they used to play, you know, The Avengers. They used to be Benny Hill. They used to play a lot of Monty Python.
When I first started making it in America, the big British hit that the Americans knew of was Benny Hill.
So my assumption was that the British people were very complicated. With those three television shows is the things I was watching. So The Avengers, which is very avant-garde spy shit, right?
Yeah.
Then you got Benny Hill, which is not avant-garde. And then you have the sophisticated Monty Python humor. You had to know something to find it funny.
But British humor has always been childish. From Benny Hill through Monty Python, we've always been childish and smutty and naughty, and we've always tried to take the piss out of authority. So what we do to authority, I mean, in the 60s and 70s, you couldn't watch telly without a comedy sketch being a judge walking away and he was wearing women's clothes behind him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was taking down authority by ridiculing them. Mm-hmm. That's our thing.
Yeah.
It's very different in America.
But I think that's actually spread. Well, what are the papers called here? Red Tops that do really kind of
tabloids.
Tabloids.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That kind of spread to America with, like, I guess in the mid-90s, going to the 2000s, where they started having E! Entertainment Television, all these things started being really celebrity-based kind of stuff. Like, the Red Tops would do a lot of the, this person leaving a restaurant fucked up, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then it turned into kind of almost, you said the silly humor thing, but the anti-authority thing almost is now at a fever pitch in America.
It's funny, isn't it? Because, again, you know, in the sort of 70s, 80s, an observation, I always thought famous people were built up by the general public and the papers to knock them down.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. In America, they'd sort of looked after their separates forever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
One good gig. You're Vin Diesel, man. You're in there forever, bro. You
know? Highest earning actor.
Yeah, Mark Vincent. He used to be a security guy in New York.
Oh, really?
I knew him way back when. He's a great dude, though. Now, my son had a question, because he's a big fan of yours. I don't know if I told you. I texted you one time that my son was watching, we watched Night at the Museums. And he's like, that's your friend, right? I was like, yeah. He's like, I love that guy, man. But he had a question for you. And it's a pretty good question, considering it comes from a little boy. It's like, what's something you want to do that you haven't done in real life? So maybe something you did in a movie that seemed really cool. Like, he was thinking, being the head of a museum. He thought that would be fucking awesome.
Well, I do like museums.
Yeah.
I do.
Aside from that, what drew you to that role? Was it because...
Well, it started off as a returned favour because I met Ben Stiller.
The guy who couldn't cry in Tropic Thunder. He's a great actor. That's so funny.
I asked him to do extras and he came over.
Oh, so that was off the back of extras. Yeah. I remember that one too. That was great. That was funny.
And then he got us, he sent me an email saying, if you'd like to return the favour, I've got a part for you in my new movie, United Museum. He put no pressure as a joke, right? And so I did that and then there were three. But again, it's me popping up doing my thing. Mm-hmm. I think Ben surrounded himself with people he liked and it was great fun. I loved it.
Did you get to keep the suit? My boy said it was a nice bow tie.
I think I did.
Yeah,
I think I did, actually. But it's funny because those things that are fun, I don't even count as part as my oob. I don't put them on my CV. Even things like writing an episode of The Simpsons or hosting the Golden Globes or popping up in a film, I don't count.
That's like fringe benefits, right?
Yeah, they're fun. They're a weekend away. Yeah. You know, the things that I sweat about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like playing golf for me. They're a perk and they're fun. But the things that I sweat over for 2 years before anyone sees, they're the things that I say are mine.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I hear you.
And there's not many of those. I haven't done a lot. People think, oh, you've done a lot. I think, well, I could discount half of them because they're not mine.
Yeah.
But things I'd like to do
that you haven't done in real life. You know, like you might have had something in a film that you did, or you wrote something that you wanted to do. Because obviously, I think he wanted.
Well,
to
obviously, in my head, I remember the first time I spoke to you. I wanted to question you about being in the Marines.
Really?
I've been fascinated with that shit because I'm not that person. I'm fascinated. Without going into detail, I know there's a very dark, serious side of that, and we see the glamour bits and we see the heroic bit. But I know, and I don't want to know in a way, you've done and seen some awful, awful shit, I suppose. You know what I mean? You know? And I get that. Mm-hmm. I get that. But I'm still fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by the invention of it. And then the fact that the training. I watched this thing on British TV called SAS.
Well, yeah.
And I think, I'd last 30 seconds.
There's a guy I know, what's his name? Foxy. The Jason Foxy.
Yeah, they're amazing.
He's a Royal Marine SBS.
I know. I told you last time that I was giving a security guy in America and he turned out to be a SWAT negotiator. And I was going, Jesus Christ, tell me about this shit. It's a morbid fascination. I'm fascinated by it. And I'm scared. Just like when I saw Godfather, I thought, oh my God, I'd love to be a Godfather. You think, geez, if you met a gangster, you'd shit yourself. You know?
it's relative to a certain point. Like when you talk about violence and maybe a Godfather, you know, or a Marine or someone in the service having to resort to violence.
Yeah.
For, in my opinion, in my experience rather, it's not a resolution to violence. It's a predisposition to it.
Well,
so
of course.
If you see like a Godfather, he doesn't stay up at night because he had to kill that dude in his family.
No, I know. And also, and things with like, you know, organized, you know, it's odd to say a soldier's violent, just like it's odd to say a boxer's violent.
Yeah. It's just part of the shit, man. They're not violent.
They're doing things to overcome and you know, beat someone else's will. And I think boxing has more in common with chess than violence. Violence is something else. Violence is an attitude. And I think by its very definition, it's wrong. Violence is wrong. But then when you justify it in any way, like sport or the political side of war, it becomes something else. And it's just not true that everyone who serves is a thug. Just like it's not true that everyone who boxes is a thug. The opposite can be true.
Yeah.
Do you know
who was it? They always had the great boxing names where they called them Gentleman Jim, Ricky Gervais.
I know.
I just thought
that's
it was
one of my favorite documentaries of all time.
Yeah.
Unforgivable Blackness.
Yeah.
About gentlemen.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's an incredible movie about racism at the time in America. And no, I'm fascinated by this thing. So
would you think about doing something in those lines as far as like creating a?
I couldn't because as a comedian. And you mustn't take yourself seriously, and you mustn't.
But dude, I'll tell you, the funniest guys I've ever met, and in the circumstances I've met them, is in that kind of in the service, in unimaginable fucking horror. There is such humor. It's because you have to have it,
or
you fucking fall apart, man.
But you know, I'm a fat little funny liberal British comic, right? But that doesn't mean I don't wish I was a hero. I wish I was a decorated warrior. I wish I'd saved someone from a burning building. I wish I was the heavyweight boxing champion of the world. I wish I was the fastest man on earth. If I was 40 now, I'd be doing UFC. Oh, Jesus Christ, that shit. All the stuff I'm doing. Like
I can just see you at the physical, at the weigh-in, just like, fuck this motherfucker.
Yeah, I've made the weight if I'm heavyweight. Yeah. I've done that.
I always found, like, especially when UFC first started, the guys were not necessarily like, you know, six packs abs. They were sluggers. And one guy walk up and just punch you and you.
Oh,
you
know. I know. The early days of these two guys, it was like they were fighting in a car park. Everything ended with ground and pound.
Yeah, yeah. When I first saw that, there was that whole idea of shame. When you actually see like a video of someone really getting knocked or something like that,
yeah,
you feel like ashamed of watching it. It's like, you know what I mean? I guess that's basic humanity or dignity
unless it's the bully.
Yeah,
if it's really someone weird. Picking on someone, I love those videos
instant
karma, honestly.
Hey, why don't you go fuck yourself?
I know. What is that in us? Because it's justified.
Yeah.
It's a piece of justice. It's a fast piece of justice. Mm-hmm. There's an arsehole picking on a nice guy. The nice guy turns out to be a boxer. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
There was one great one I saw recently because I watched these things with my boy, and it's called "People Are Amazing." So it's people doing amazing shit, like, you know, acrobatics or bike tricks and stuff like that. But there was this one was like instant karma. I watched it for a second, but it was virtually amazing, where there's this one guy, these three dudes set upon him, and he was small, turned out to be an MMA fighter. And literally systematically punched one, held him, hit the other guy with the first guy in like headbutted the guy with the other guy's head. I was like, this is, you know,
I know.
But who has that presence of mind when you're in a street fight to go, oh, I'm gonna grab this guy, punch him, hold on to him, hit him with that guy.
I know, it's I've always been into martial arts, though. Did you study it all? I did judo.
So don't rush the stage, then. Right? You get jacked, man.
I'm no marine. No, I did judo for like 5 years. I did karate for about 8 years. Now I box. I've always, you know, but you know, I've never had real fights.
Yep.
It's all theory.
Well, you know what? And this is something when the time is right, I want to kind of let my son know that getting punched in the face, you're not made of glass. You know, you're not going to shatter. You're a lot tougher. People are a lot tougher than they think they are.
Yeah. I mean, the important thing is that you do the right thing. Because then there's no pain. There's no trouble. If you've done the right thing, you know, outside getting really physically harmed, which, again, is probably rare in a fight. Your ego is usually bruised. But it's fine to walk away. It's fine to win.
Oh, no, I do a lot of walking away. Yesterday, there was this kind of like kerfuffle in a car park in co-op. And this kid who has a crutch got out, rah, 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 starts yelling and shit. And I was like, hey, man, you need to calm down. I realized when I told someone to calm down, never tell anybody to calm down because they don't calm down. You don't fucking tell me to calm down. I'll give you a left hook. And I realized the fact that he told me what hand he was going to hit me with.
That's funny.
He wasn't really going to hit me with it. And I was like, he was really blustered up. I think his girl or his mom was in the car. And I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to walk away. Because that's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
To be able to walk away knowing, if you studied karate for 8 years, you know that you could probably knock someone the fuck out. And you walk away, you're just like, you can go about your life.
If you know
that, and that's almost more satisfying.
You know that you've won.
Yeah,
that you've won.
It's like the Jedi thing, like, these aren't the droids.
Whatever. I like the fact that you're a Marine and you use the word kerfuffle. I like that coming over the radio. Yeah. There's a kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle. Oh, gosh. Well, I tell you, my vocabulary has gotten bigger since I've been married to an English woman and I spent time in the UK. I read all the time. I got like 3 books going at a go. So
wow.
I'm always reading different words. So some of them get stuck in my head like that.
Yeah, no, it's a good word. Yeah. It's a funny word.
I don't know how it came through. But anyway, I want to keep you, man. I know that we've been here doing this for a minute. But
it's been good fun, man.
It has been. It's always good hanging out with you, dude. So we got my son's question out of the way, which I think is probably be a Marine, MMA,
just
prize fighter.
Ricky, the best fighter in the world ever, Gervais.
I think he'd probably be like, yeah, I can see that happening. No, the last thing I want to ask you about is, have you ever heard of CBD oil? Now, CBD
is... Oh, is this the one,
the non-psychoactive part of a cannabis plant.
So they extract a bit that calms you down, but that doesn't make you
dream necessarily
about
calm you down.
Being a rock star.
Yeah, yeah. You don't get out there like, oh, I'm high as a motherfucker. I'm Snoop Dogg. But the reason I'm asking is we talked about it briefly last time, and I just wondered if you ever checked it out.
No, I haven't.
Right, I'm going to send you a couple of infos on it because it's a cool thing. I'm going to say guys in our generation, but guys our age, right? There's always that thing, we're always trying to do something that's 5 or 10% better every day, right? Just trying to, like, you're doing some boxing or whatever. This stuff makes everything just a little bit less strenuous. Maybe even a less, you know, if you find a bump, you'd be like, it's probably not cancer. You know, you wouldn't go, ah, fuck, I can't get it off, and cut it off. You know what I'm saying?
See, what I do now is I take this, I find a lump, and it will be cancer. And I go, Huey said, chill.
Huey gave me cancer. He came by and he fucking gave me cancer. My man. Thanks, dude. But anyway, I'll let you know. Well, I hope you like them apples, because as far as it goes, Ricky is a really good guy, and I love spending time with him. Always a genuine guy and always cool. Next week, we have the legendary Mr. Don Letts. That's right, the Don. Filmmaker, DJ, musician, an all-around creative maverick. I really love the man a lot. He has a show in Six Music. Great guy, great show, called Culture Clash. This guy has directed music videos for The Clash. He's on a Clash album cover. You know, Bob Marley, Elvis Costello. Just to drop off a couple names to hurt your toe. You don't want to miss this one. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the pod, y'all. Spread love. It's the Brooklyn way. Thank you very much. Until next we meet, stay classic.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.